which may seem obvious, but for a lot of scholarship in literature and in culture, it wasn't obvious for a number of years because we were very caught up with a paradigm that emphasized language and culture as socially constructed, as things that were constructed by human existence. And I want to argue that we transform the material world, but we don't fully control the material world that we transform. And that's an important insight for us, both on the level of just our individual bodies, but also as a culture. And it's an insight ecologically and economically, too.
What are a couple examples of how the material world should impinge or how we should consider it in a given work of fiction?
One of the works of fiction I look at is J.G. Ballard's rather infamous novel Crash, which is about car crashes and the erotics of car crashes, not a light read. But one of the reasons I look at that novel is because Ballard emphasizes the ways in which the sort of built environment and the materiality of automobiles, they're humanly built, but they aren't fully humanly controlled. And so it focuses on the accident and the way in which the accident functions to transform the bodies of the various characters.
How should this insistence on the material encourage us to reconsider some texts that might have been considered in a Marxist fashion or a Lacanian fashion or good old Foucault?
Yeah.
What is it going to give us in nuance that those folks, because it's at the end, it's all about power.
Yeah, it is. It is. Yeah. And I should say, first of all, that I'm very indebted to both Marxist scholarship and Foucauldian scholarship and some psychoanalysis in this book as well. So like they got read in a certain way in what I call in the book the linguistic turn or the cultural turn, that emphasis on language and culture is socially constructed. But what the emphasis on materiality does is it suggests that even though we have various forms of power that function through language, through discourse, through economics in various ways, that materiality intersects with those forms of power in ways that power doesn't fully control. Part of this is actually looking at the possibility of an outside to power, because we tend, especially in a lot of postmodern thought, there was a kind of emphasis on the idea that there was no exteriority to power. But I want to argue that there is. And I actually think that that's part of what Marx was arguing all along on a certain level. He got read very culturally in the last, 20 to 30 years, but he was really arguing for the importance of the material world and material life, both enabling humans, right? I mean, that was part of his materialism, was that humans transform the world through work, but it also set limits on the possibilities of what humans could do at any given moment.
One of those limits is a cultural limit, because he argues that you really can't escape the culture in which you were raised.
Yes, absolutely. That is an important cultural limit, and that's an important historical limit.
The material, though, also imposes a limit. How does that affect the culture?
Absolutely. Our culture likes to imagine or fantasize, and we're not the only ones who do this, but in our moment of cyberspace and in our moment of all these sort of fantasies of transcending the material, the financial economy is a version of that as well. We don't pay attention to the ways in which the material often sets limits on things until we're right in the middle of the crisis. So, for example, the financial economy winds up concretizing in specific places like Greece or like the mortgages that all of a sudden went bad. You know, what we think of as an abstract and sort of free-floating entity actually has these moments of intense concretization. But also ecologically, you know, thinking about the ways in which the waste we produce is something that we don't really think about. But it in fact, has influences on our culture, especially in terms of things like which populations are more exposed to toxins, which populations are more exposed to various kinds of ecological violence, and those are often racialized as well as classed.
Or by reappropriating those artifacts to create new cultural artifacts.
Absolutely. And part of what I think is also important about attending to the material is attending to the materiality of those artifacts and of those texts. And, you know, thinking about a book as a material entity, and one that also then opens out to other forms of materiality.
I recently interviewed a self-published author who wrote a work of fiction based extensively on his own experience as a professional boxer. One of his observations was, we write about the material. We write about things. And it used to be the things were of the natural world, intense descriptions of leaves or animals or what have you. And now it's writing about the social relationships or today's urban environment or what have you.
Yeah.
How is this playing out in your observations and your sensibilities about experimental fiction.
Sure. I think in a couple ways. One of the things my book is trying to trouble is the simple division between culture and nature, as if, in fact, we don't have elements of what we call nature in culture, and as if nature itself also doesn't have a history. I mean, that was actually one of Marx's points, and you know, anybody who thinks that nature doesn't have a history has never actually paid attention to the history of different tree populations and how they've been shaped by human interaction. And so part of what I want to argue for is that in the moment of sort of high postmodernism, we got very preoccupied with everything being humanly constructed, even as a lot of that theory was kind of challenging ideas of humans being fully in control of their worlds. There was still a kind of hubris that was about the human as creator and sole author, both in postmodern fiction, but also in a lot of postmodern theory. And part of what I want to argue is just because it's human created, that doesn't mean it's human controlled. Part of what we need to look at in text is the ways in which things like the body, for example, places limits on what we can do and what we can't do. We could try and transform that body, but it's never seamless. Even the transformation itself often has consequences. This isn't a Luddite argument. I'm not arguing against those kinds of technology, but I am arguing for us to really theorize the material outcomes and also the different kinds of material agencies that are at play there.
It's a great time to ask for an example in literature.
Dodie Bellamy's book, The Letters of Mina Harker, she's not a super well-known writer, although she's a big deal in creative writing circles. Her book is an epistolary novel that focuses on the AIDS crisis in San Francisco, as well as ideas of female embodiment. One of the things that a lot of postmodern metafiction had trouble really dealing with was the finality for organisms of death on a certain level. And part of what she emphasizes is the ways in which various people with AIDS experience the materiality of the body in ways that are often haunting, uncanny, but also how they gain a kind of agency and relationship to that materiality. There's a character, Sam, who sort of becomes a kind of undead character. All the characters in the book are kind of undead. Dodie's alter ego, Mina Harker, is undead, obviously borrowed from Dracula, but there's an emphasis there on the ways in which the body not only enables certain forms of subjectivity, but it also sets limits on it. That disease is something that we don't fully control, and the way in which the materiality of the body is shaped by disease is really at the heart of what Bellamy's book is about.
How do you see popular cultural changes such as gay marriage, higher profiles for transgender issues, mm-hmm. the political themes of income inequality, mm-hmm. Food production? Mm-hmm. How do you see those playing out in the material emphasis that you're going for in new fiction?
Ah, yeah. In social issues, we often, I think, are really fascinated and preoccupied, and rightly so, about the emergence of new kinds of rights, the emergence of new kinds of subjectivity, or even just a recognition of subjectivities that were always already there, but a kind of new acceptance and recognition of it, like trans subjectivities, like gay marriage and gay rights, and the sort of recognition of that. But part of what the insistence on the material would argue about that is that we have to deal not only with the abstract rights, but the ways in which material inequalities often still go along with those abstract rights that are granted. So, you know, who gets to afford surgery? If you are somebody who's trans, who wants to transition, who's able to afford that? Who's able to not? Who has the doctors to be able to do that? Who doesn't? Those are material issues. You know, there may be gay marriage, but what about more disenfranchised, lower income queer folk who, you know, still are often exposed to various kinds of homophobic violence? You know, their own sexual practices may not actually be reflected in the sort of very traditional construction of gay marriage. Rights struggles are really important, but rights struggles are only one part. The history of race in the last 50 years is an indication that rights aren't enough. It's about also transforming things on the level of material access and the material realities of everyday life. And I think that's a focus in literature in a writer like Karen Yamashita. Her book, Tropic of Orange, it's a multicultural book, but it's also a book that emphasizes all these different aspects of both the political economy and the ecology that the greater LA and Tijuana area sort of functions in. For her characters of color, the material world is absolutely interwoven with their lives. They don't disidentify with it. It's not just about rights for them. It's actually about dealing with the sort of conditions on the ground.
And you close with her in your book.
I do.
Perhaps we should too, but why did you choose that?
All these writers are all kind of transgressive writers. I worked with Burroughs, I worked with Pynchon, Leslie Marmon Silko, brilliant Native American writer who writes one of the darkest books that's ever been put to the page. You know, Dodie Bellamy. These are all authors that importantly are negative. In some ways, they're all importantly challenging our symbolic fictions of the world by pushing us to focus and deal with the forms of abject materiality that we otherwise wouldn't want to look at. But I wanted to end with something hopeful, something more positive, even though all those texts have moments of hope and visions of hope. I'm not trying to say that they're just
unrelieved.
Yes, exactly. Yes, beautifully said. But I thought there was a kind of vision of what a materialist world might look like. And I wanted to also indicate the kind of open-ended quality of what I was trying to do with this project. It was a way of saying, let me give narrative control over to this other voice that in fact speaks a kind of utopian possibility, even as it's also recognizing the hindrances to that utopian realization. Okay, this is from Tropic of Orange. The past spread out like a great starry fan and then folded in upon itself. Encroaching on this vision was a larger one. The great Pacific stretching along its great rim, brimming over long coastal shores from one hemisphere to the other. And there were names of places he had never seen, from the southernmost tip of Chile to the Galapagos, skirting the tiny waste of land at Panama, up Baja to Big Sur to Vancouver, around the Aleutians to the Bering Strait. From the north, that peaceful ocean swept from Vladivostok around the Japan Isles and the Korean Peninsula to Shanghai, Taipei, Ho Chi Minh City, through the thousand islands of the Philippines, Malaysia, Indonesia, and Micronesia, sweeping about that giant named Australia and her sister New Zealand. Manzanar looked out on the strange end and beginning, the very last point west, and after that it was all east. The inky waves with their moonlit spume stuttering against the shore seemed to speak to this very truth, garbage jettisoned back, prohibiting further progress. And there was the great landmass to the south, the southern continent, and the Central Americas. Everything was for a brief moment fixed as if they had supposedly always been. Of course, with continental drift, the changing crust of the Earth's surface had over billions of years come to this, cracked into continents, spread apart by large bodies of water. Now human civilization covered everything in layers, generations of building upon building upon building, the residue, the burial sites, the garbage that defined the people after people for centuries. Manzanar saw it all, but darkly, before it would shift irrevocably.
Christopher Brew is a professor of English at Illinois State University. His book is Insistence of the Material, Literature in the Age of Biopolitics. He's also the author of Hard-Boiled Masculinities. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Charlie.
I'm Charlie Schlenker.